So instead, we use this process called UDP, which essentially means imagine we just have a fire hose of data. And we're just like, you know, we're just going to keep the data flowing as high pressure and as fast as we can. And hopefully
– it might be putting out a fire. It might not be. That's not our problem. Our problem is just get the water out.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and we don't necessarily care about the individual droplets, you know, that are coming out of this fire hose. All we care about is the thing on the other end pretty much wet? Like, mm-hmm. That's kind of – Butterscotch shenanigans. Hey, everybody. Welcome to episode 290 of Coffee with Butterscotch, the game dev comedy podcast of Butterscotch Shenanigans. I'm Seth, and I'm the games programmer.
I'm Adam, and I'm just sitting around.
I'm Sam, and I got new warm gloves to keep my hands warm, you know?
This is a show where we talk about life, business, and working in the games industry. Today is December 18th, 2020. Before we get started, we have a warning. There's going to be profanity in this show. We'd also like to thank our recurring supporters over at moneygrab.bscotch.net. Thanks for letting us grab your money. All right, you guys. Today on the show, we're gonna throw some people under the bus. Mm-hmm. This is bus throwing day. Okay, mm-hmm.
Let's get started in style.
Starting with T-Mobile. All right, so we needed phones a while back. We got some phones. Got them through T-Mobile. T-Mobile's in town. They got the office. You know, we go in there. We get the phones. We do the whole thing. You get the app. You get the app on the phone to manage your account. Doesn't work. Doesn't do a damn thing. You can't manage your account through the app. The app just takes you to the website. What does the website say? The website says 404, page not found. You want to do a thing? You can't do a thing because our website doesn't work. You just have to come into the office.
Or be on hold for an hour and a half.
Those are your choices. Be on hold. You want customer service?
No.
You're going to wait 2 hours. Then at the end of 2 hours, we're going to say to you, hey, sorry, we don't really actually have any people around here working, so we'll just call you back at some point. Then they don't. Okay. That's been a sort of a general summary of how things have gone.
And also, we should say we went with T-Mobile originally because this is the best kind of user experience you get from a normal telecom.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So recently – we were looking at that bill that just keeps going up. The rates just keep going up. I'm paying a lot of money for this amazing service. Mm-hmm. And at a certain point, we kind of hit that like, hey, what if we didn't though, you know?
Yeah, especially when you're home all the time on Wi-Fi, which means I'm not even using their shit 99% of the time.
Yeah. So we switched over to Google Fi this week, and what a seamless transition.
Except for on the T-Mobile side, periodically.
Except on the T-Mobile side, which further cemented that, you know, it's time for some bus throwing. So when I activated my Google Fi account, it transferred my number over to Google Fi, right? Because I'm on a new carrier
just,
and now.
Just magically.
They just sent me a little thing and they're like, here, just do these like two incredibly straightforward and simple things and boom, you're in Google Fi now. I was like, what? I don't need to go to an office and stand in line and be on hold or do anything. I just do two simple things that take 3 minutes. So I did that. And then I was like, ooh, actually, now that I'm no longer, I should go double check the T-Mobile site and make sure that I'm like no longer paying, that I can like remove my payment stuff or whatever. I go to T-Mobile. My account's deleted. They just deleted it.
So they're like, you moved your number, which means buy without any –
yeah. Since you moved your number, then you just – your email account, nothing works with us now. And I was like, shit, because I was the administrator of our business account.
Mm-hmm. So they just deleted the administrator of the business account.
Yeah. And now there is no administrator. So then it was a whole day of just like trying to get – administrator access back so that we could finish this migration process. So it just really cemented that decision. Mm-hmm. So anyways, it was one of those experiences that that was kind of like really,
you know, you make
a decision and you think like, oh yeah, I don't know if this is the right decision. And then something happens like right at the end where you're like, oh my God, yes.
I think it's like when you go to break up with someone and then – and you're like kind of feeling bad about it, but then they totally like
They totally do exactly the thing. Do
exactly what you just said to me. You know, and you're like, oh, okay, no, this is great. Yep, I've made the right choice.
Yep. Yeah. Right call. Right call. So that was a whole process that happened this week, and I feel pretty good. Feel pretty good about that shift. Feeling light. Feeling like the weight of the world.
Yeah, actually, I will say that. So on the one hand, we're throwing things under the bus, but I think actually much more importantly, there's certain things that we've all grown up that have just been bad experiences. So like dealing with telecoms, dealing with cable. Yeah. It's like just throwing telecoms under the bus because they suck.
Banking websites,
like all kinds of things. But because we've all accepted that these are just bad experiences, then everybody just continues to make those bad experiences. But then periodically, because I'll just keep supporting Google in this discussion. You know, so we got Google Fi now, but we were having some trouble getting sufficient Wi-Fi through our house, and so we were like looking into mesh routers and all these like cool new technologies, you know. And there were like so many things, there were so many options, so many decisions you can make. And like in the past, I've always like done tons of research on routers and then like figured out how to like set up really, really nice setups and like perfect security and like all this kind of stuff. And I was like, I don't want to do that anymore.
Yeah. Why am I becoming an IT expert?
Why am I doing this?
And just to have internet in my house.
Yeah. So I went with the Google Nest router, mesh router, whatever they call the thing, because like Google bought Nest and now it's its own, whatever, however that relationship works. But it came with this like beautiful unboxing experience. You know, like you open it up and it's this cute little, this, and it looks nice. You know, normally you get a router and it's like a fucking spider or it's this piece of shit tower or whatever, you know?
Put the spider in a very tall, obvious place in your house where it's not blocked by anything. You're like, but it's
hideous. They're hideous. And exactly. And you have to showcase it somewhere. So it's just this little cute thing that's like the size of a softball, right? And then I'm like, okay, now I have to plug my, because in the past it's like you get a new router. Okay, plug it into your laptop or PC directly so you can talk to it, or right? And then you have to know what address you have to go to. So you're like, I need to go to 198.162.1.1 to log into the router. And I got to go find the default admin password. Like, there's all this shit you got to do. And then you're welcomed with this horrible interface that's like, that assumes you know a million things. It's like, ooh, do you want the QoS on or off? And it's like, what the fuck?
What are we talking about?
What am I looking at?
Yeah. So I got this Google Mesh thing, which I knew was going to be like easier to put together, but I didn't understand how easy. It was like literally like you download an app. Same deal as with Google Fi. You get an app, you plug it in, and then Google's just like, it just walks you through some steps and you just hit a few buttons. And then it was like, okay, setting it up. And then I just waited for like a minute and it was running. And then I looked at it and I was like, because I know it has both 5G and 2.5G, and usually you got two separate networks. You're like choosing between the two. You're like, oh, which one's stronger or whatever. It's just choosing it for you. It doesn't even show you that there are different ones. Like, now you open your phone, there's just one network as far as you can tell. And then behind the scenes, magically somehow, it's just constantly changing you to the one that is currently the best depending on where you are in your house. And I was like, what? It could have been like this.
You know? Yeah, the whole time. You know, I had this recently, you know, speaking of technology that somehow hasn't gotten disrupted yet. Printers.
Uh-huh.
Okay.
Printers, geez.
My fucking printer, last week, I go to print one thing, which is like, you know, again, working from home, not exactly doing a lot of paper-based things anyways, but I go to print something and the printer is – it's been a good workhorse for like probably 5 or 6 years, and it just decided it no longer could tell if there was paper in the tray. Right. That was it. So I took it apart. I like rubbed off the sensor. Did all the stuff you can try to do to make sure that it like maybe will work again.
Printer has like three jobs, right? It's like know how much paper's in the tray, mm-hmm. and then move paper out of the tray and put ink on it.
Yep.
Those are its three jobs.
And it started failing on the one. And so after taking it apart, cleaning it up and putting it back together and then having it fail again, I was like, oh no, this means I have to literally buy a new printer, which – as you know, it's always just not a good thing because you look around and I was like, so the first mistake I made was I looked and I got like the top rated one that was in the same kind of the same brand. So I used the Brother printer model. And I just went on Amazon, got the top rated one. It comes in 2 days thanks to, you know, 2 day shipping, which is amazing. Go to plug this bad boy in, get it set up, and it doesn't have wireless connectivity. And I was like, I didn't realize I had to specify in 2020 that I wanted to not Like, what the fuck?
Wait, are you telling me, Sam, that you don't want to have a cable running directly from your own personal computer into your
printer? Is this a thing? What is this? Is this for real? And I was so I was so confused. And then my wife was just laughing at me because she was like, you bought a printer without, like, you didn't read the whole thing. And I was like, I can't believe that this.
It seems like you should be able to make that assumption, you know?
I mean, right? you can get like a Raspberry Pi from 2010 for like $3.50 that has Wi-Fi.
Yeah, exactly. And I was like, what? And so, you know, a lot of rightful mocking, I think, on her side took place. And then she placed the order for the replacement one because I was like, I don't trust myself anymore because apparently – you know, even with a printer, the one obvious function it needs when everyone has tablets, phones, and laptops these days is not present in the most popular model on Amazon. So, yep. But even speaking of that, like the whole experience of printer stuff, still garbage. Mm-hmm. Still absolute garbage.
And we're going to their website.
Yeah.
You have to install drivers from their website, you know, and then you'll have to like go to the printer. It'll probably have some kind of like LCD screen that looks like it's from a calculator from 1992.
Yes. Diana had to type in our password to the internet using a single
up, down arrow and maybe like a middle button. And like you're just going through the alphabet, like A through Z one at a time, doing that whole thing. Oh, wait, what? You have capital letters? That's a whole separate thing. You got to go first past the first 26 letters. Listen,
I have an air conditioner for my bed whose remote control works better than a fucking printer.
Yeah.
Right?
Yep.
That is
– what is this? What's the deal with the printer companies? And also, how come no one swooped in, you know?
No one swooped in because I think the printing industry, I think it's, you know, it's eventually
– not very lucrative.
I think it's on the decline.
Yeah, nobody wants to print anything. I print things three times a year. So then I just put up with this shitty printer experience each time.
And you know when you print things, Adam? It's when you have to deal with an institution that hasn't updated its processes for 20 years.
Yeah.
Because they're like
– like a bank.
Yeah, they'd be like, hey – I'm going to email you this document because it's like, that's easy for us to do. I'm going to email you this document. I'm going to need you to print it, sign it, bring it in person.
Yep. Mm-hmm. Or fax it in. And I'm like, can't you send me like a hello sign, like a digital signature? Why can't we do that? And they're like, we're not set up to handle that. And I'm like, I'm not set up to handle this, to be honest with you. I'm not here for it, you know?
Oh, ridiculous. Man.
This is where I feel like, you know, we as consumers need a stronger presence to be able to band together and just say enough, you know, like here's the thing.
We're already doing that. We're already boycotting printers because nobody needs them anymore. Like this is already happening.
Sort of an accidental boycott. But here's the thing. Like sometimes you're playing a video game, you're fighting a boss. The boss is very strong, you know, and eventually the boss just says enough. And then they become invincible and then they just run away and just stop participating, right? We need to do that as customers.
As a society.
We need to have an enough moment with some of this bullshit where we just stop.
Well, I think it's the problem. Like we talk about the issue with, you know, the systems that you don't touch and how those are always the systems that, one, when they break down, you're at a loss because –
yeah,
you know, you never touch the damn thing. And then two, there are always the systems that you will never improve on, which I think to add to both your points, basically, like printing is actually in this exact horrifying category of devices that is currently slated to always be present in everyone's life, but also always terrible because you're not going to be using it enough to ever – no one's ever going to get pissed off enough and then say like –
But the market is
big enough. I don't know.
But the interesting thing is that there are still things where that rule doesn't apply because like going just along the full same vein, I also just bought because I was curious a Nest or Google, whatever their company is now called, smoke detector / carbon monoxide detector thing, you know, but it's like the smart home style thing. So, but yeah, like who would think you would need a smart version of that, right? But let me tell you about what this thing can fucking do. And again, it's like I don't realize how shitty the normal experience is of using a smoke detector until you get this, right? So this thing, it'll just send you an alert to your phone when its battery is low, right?
Instead of screeching like a banshee. Yeah,
right. Well, instead of screeching in such a way that you also can't tell which fucking one it is.
Oh, like, yeah,
in
our house, one it is.
It's a 15-minute game to figure out where the chirp's coming from.
Right? Yeah, it'll tell you which one it is. Also, with our little wireless mesh access points, because we have two in the house. If one of them, I just noticed it once because I had unplugged my desktop setup because I was doing some computer stuff, and also my phone popped up an alert and it was like, "Hey, we can't talk to one of your routers. Like, you should check and make sure it's plugged in." And I was like, "It just knows that." Right. So this thing, you can run tests on it whenever you want to. It'll automate running tests, which you're supposed to actually test your smoke detectors like once a quarter or something like that, or once a month. Right.
Who's doing that?
Nobody's doing that, but this one, it'll just do it automatically. So that's just happening.
And then, you're supposed to walk up and poke it or something.
Yeah. Like, you have to like push a thing on it. Yeah.
And then it screams in your ear when you poke it.
And then it screams in your ear. That's how you know it works. So this, it just like does it automatically silently and then tells you if it didn't work, because that's the only time that it fucking matters. And then if it goes off when you don't want it to, and also you can snooze it. So you can be like, "Oh, you're about to get some smoke because I'm cooking." So just like, don't worry about it. You can just tell it to do that. And then also if it starts to go off because it does hear something, then you can just tell it, "No, this is fine." Right. But if you like, now if you think back like to the experience, like unfortunately our house is like, like vertical enough that we don't have this problem. But in the past, I've lived in places where like one out of five times we cook, the fucking smoke detector goes off.
Oh man, whenever we make bacon,
a towel against it.
Yeah.
Whenever we make bacon, like trying to get the smoke away.
Suddenly
you just don't have to do anything.
Yeah, I'm realizing that I should invest in some of these smoke alarm, because like I have been so annoyed. It's been, I guess a couple of years now living in this house, and the placement of these smoke detectors is such that you just can't tell where the hell the chirp is coming from. And then whenever we make bacon, someone's got to go out with a towel and wave it around like they're in the flag corps, And I'm just, I didn't realize that this was not, I didn't have to do this.
That's exactly. I didn't know either. I just got this thing because I was like, "Oh, this like sounds kind of nice," because I needed a new one anyway, and so I was like, "Oh, I'll just get one of these just to see," because I'm kind of getting in. But yeah, to me, all the smart home stuff sounded like this is just unnecessary techie stuff, right?
Yep.
But as I've actually like just barely touched. Another thing that I bought, which is not a Google product, so we can stop advocating for them, is an automatic water shutoff valve. I still have to get it installed because it requires professional installation, but it's. Again, it's one of these things like I never even thought to consider existed, but it's a thing that you just like stick into your main water supply line coming into your house, right? And it's just a big ass valve that you can just turn the water on and off just like you normally have. Only normally you have a manual crank that you just like yank on really hard if you need to turn your water off, right? So it's automatic and it's on Wi-Fi. It's got an app, the whole deal. You can just push a button to turn it off, but it's also measuring flow rate constantly, right? So it knows if there's a leak in your house. It just fucking knows.
Yeah.
Right? And then it will just turn itself off if there's a fucking leak in your house.
Instead of like 4 days later being like, "Hey, the wall's a different color.
The wall fell off." Yeah. Yeah. You just like, you don't have that anymore. And then it has like these little detectors that are also on Wi-Fi that you just can place around your house in places that like might have other kinds of leaks that it wouldn't detect because it's like during normal use or whatever. So like underneath your washing machine or whatever. And then if those detect moisture, it just causes your fucking water supply to turn off, So like, cause I have a few paranoias. One is water damage. One is fire. So I'm trying to slowly like just fix these in the house, but such a better user.
Now, does it know, like if you're currently taking a shower, right? Like you're all soaked up and then it turns out that there's also a leak like under your washing machine. Does it let you finish your shower first?
Probably not, but also I wouldn't want it to. If there's a leak under my washing machine, like I want to go address that and then get back in the shower, So
maybe what it should do is it should sort of scream from your phone, be like, oh fuck, there's a leak. Wrap up the shower, buddy. Uh-huh. We got it. Yep. You got 30 seconds to de-soap before we get this thing.
Yeah, it was because I've had two leaks in the house that I fortunately caught in time, but I very well could have not. Actually, three. One just like the sump pump stopped working, and so stuff just backed up and then got the whole basement wet. Another one was a line that went out from the basement, just exploded, but it like only exploded a little bit. So it was just like slowly running water to the basement for like half of a day before we realized it. And so again, everything is just fucking soaked, right? And another time in the garage, it exploded, and the garage water comes from, you know, again, from the house. And so, and that one exploded. I didn't know it until I went to go turn on something else and the water pressure was really low. And I was like, why is this happening? And I couldn't figure out why. And then I went out to the garage to check, and it was just fucking hosing the garage down from this exploding pipe. And it's the kind of stuff that, like, had I had this thing, it just would have stopped being a problem immediately. And then I would have gotten an alert that was like, oh, hey, something exploded. You should probably go look around and try to figure out what it was. So anyway, I'm starting to buy in on smart house technology.
Well, okay. I got one final enough moment.
What you got?
Before we move on to talking about what people really want to talk about, which is, of course, Crashlands 2, which is gutters. Gutters on your house.
Yeah.
Okay. Gutters are shit. They fill up with every piece of garbage.
Yep.
And I guess historically, we all decided 200 years ago, like, this is just the only way to get water off your roof.
Mm-hmm.
You know, water's coming down your roof, and you put it in the gutter, it runs down the gutter, and then it goes down a hole, right? So we had the problem that probably many people have who have gutters, which is they just are constantly full of leaves and garbage. And you periodically have to either risk life and limb, you know, by climbing up on a precarious ladder or getting up on the roof and like just like hoisting disgusting old ass leaves out of there and throwing them into a bucket or something. So that's, you know, that's the experience. Or you make somebody else do that. Like those are your two, those are your two options. So we got one of those like leaf filter things. It's this mesh thing that
I was like a gutter guard, right? Or something
like that. Yeah, it's like a gutter guard thing. And I was super skeptical because I'm like, I mean, this is gonna like
it's just a screen, like this.
It's gonna like stuff's gonna get caught on it. It's gonna fuck with the flow and stuff. And so I never really looked into it. But our gutters were just getting so bad, it's so annoying that eventually we looked into it and we got it hooked up. And oh my god!
Just permanently solve your problem.
Forever. It just permanently solves the problem. You just never have to worry about it again. And also, you know, there's concerns like your time out, like water damage to stuff. Well, like gutters are a big part of that because if they're redirecting water that's coming onto your roof properly, then you end up with tons of water around the foundation of the house where it's not supposed to be instead of being directed away. Boom. That problem solved.
Just fixed.
So anyways, it's pretty remarkable how long we're all willing to just put up with garbage, you know, before before finally having that enough moment.
Well, I think a lot of it is it's really expensive to be able to not put up with that stuff, you know? Yep. So it's not available to everyone in general because of that. But then even when it is available to you, you still have to make that hard decision. Like this automatic water shutoff thing, very expensive. Each one of these Google, you know, smart devices, like at minimum $100 a pop, right? So it's like, and so now you're debating like, oh, do I spend like whatever that is, like $5 for a normal, smoke detector, right? And then just put up with all the bullshit. Or do I spend literally $100 on a smoke detector, which seems like a completely
sounds crazy
insane thing to do and is also not available to most people. So, so like, I get it. It's just stupid that we all have to put up with.
Well, I think you need to have a good defined capacity for enduring nonsense because much of life is just that, right?
Yeah.
But I think the difficulty comes like when you reach a point where you're actually in a good enough state where you could not have to do some of that, and then it's easy to just keep on keeping on, right? Because you're like, well, I mean, literally my whole life I have. Whenever there's been smoke in the house from a kitchen cooking situation, I run around with a towel. Like
I whip out my towel and I just start whacking the ceiling. That's his tradition.
And to me, this is the real luxury. Like going on a nice vacation to a beach or something. Like that's great. That's a way to spend a whole bunch of money in one go, right? And it's definitely a luxury thing. But to me, it is way less luxurious to do that than it is to
not have to do a chore.
You know? If I could just not have to do a chore ever again, man, that is the best luxury that money can buy.
Yeah. All right, let's move on from throwing various products and companies under the bus for now.
We'll get back to it.
I do want to talk a little, just a smidge about what's going on with Crashlands 2 development. which is we are deep in the weeds of grappling with multiplayer stuff. And again, this is not a promise that Crash Dance 2 will have multiplayer. This is us going through R&D, figuring out what it would take to get multiplayer in there, looking at those problems and trying to see like what the potential cost is, you know, of getting this into the game.
This is a promise that we are giving it an honest evaluation.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So we just want to talk a little bit about this fun and interesting reliability problem that comes with multiplayer games that you may not know about, or you may not have ever had to think about, which is multiplayer games need to be fast, right? Like I whack a zombie and you should see me whacking that zombie like pretty much right away, as it happened. Ideally. You know?
Yep.
But the problem is that the problem is one of making sure that information actually gets from one computer to the next, because that's expensive. Like guaranteeing that when I smack that zombie, that little bit of information goes to your computer is actually a pretty involved process. And that's what is reserved for something called a TCP connection, which is what like your normal web browser uses and stuff. Because like you wouldn't expect like if I type up an email and hit send, you wouldn't expect it to be the case that email would suddenly just not go through, right? Like mm-hmm.
It's just gone now. Yeah.
Yeah. Like imagine that. Like you sent an email and it's just fucking gone. And that was like, you know, like 2% of the time your emails just are gone, right? Yeah. So when it comes to multiplayer games, we actually can't use that TCP protocol. Because of how slow it is to make sure that things happen. Mm-hmm. So instead, we use this process called UDP, which essentially means imagine we just have a fire hose of data and we're just like, you know, we're just going to keep the data flowing as high pressure and as fast as we can. And hopefully
it might be putting out a fire. It might not be. That's not our problem. Our problem is just get the water out.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And we don't necessarily care about the individual droplets, you know, that are coming out of this fire hose. All we care about is the thing on the other end pretty much wet?
Yeah. Like, is it getting the gist of this hose?
Yeah. So the difficulty here is that, and I think the fire hose is a good analogy because not every droplet is coming out at the same speed. Mm-hmm. They're kind of spraying out. A lot of them are missing, you know? And so we have to then build these layers into the games of systems to sort of loosely keep track of certain things that do matter. So if I do actually like hit a zombie and deal 20 damage to it, if that little packet of information doesn't make it, that's a big deal because mm-hmm. – Now I see the zombie with less health than you do on your computer. So we have to have like certain things that we build these little systems to make sure that we get the information. And other things, we just don't care. Like if I'm running in a straight line, then I'm just kind of like continuously sending updates about my position in the world. And like maybe one of those doesn't get through. But that's okay because I got another one coming because mm-hmm. I'm just running. I'm just running in a straight line. I'm spraying mm-hmm. that information through the fire hose. And so we've been doing a lot of interesting experiments this week just trying to figure out like what can we let fall through the cracks? What do we need to keep track of? And if we do need to keep track of something, how do we do that in a way that isn't super slow and bad and mm-hmm. dumb?
Well, because the other kind of piece of this whole problem, right, is that not only are we shooting things through this fire hose, it's imagine if what we actually did is there is like we had one big fire hose, right? And then like right directly across from it, we just duct taped a bunch of little hoses together, like in a big bundle, right? And we were spraying into that. And then all those little hoses, now we just like are random lengths and then we just like put them in different spots of the house. So we're trying to wet the whole house, right? And like do it through different windows and like and all this kind of shit. So you're spraying this thing like into this weird spider, right? So now any given droplet, like you don't know when the fuck it's going to end up in the house, right?
Right.
It's probably going to get there. It's going to get there somewhere. Yeah. And so this is how the internet works, right? Is you send a packet of data and then it just goes around the world and like all these different places. It gets like knocked through all these routers across, you know, from between your computer and where it has to go. And there's no guarantee that any two sent back to back will take the same route, which means They could get there at different times.
They could come in a different order.
Yeah,
come in
a different order. So now you don't know what order things are going to arrive in, and you don't know if everything's going to be there. And now let's say you're like, okay, but I want to be able to guarantee that certain things get there. Well, the way you do that is to first discover, did it get there, right? But how do you know it didn't get there, right? Because it might just
because you don't know yet. What you're expecting.
Yeah, you don't know what you're expecting. So that means right? That means you have to wait a bit. So now you wait a bit. Before you're like, I think I probably am not going to get this. So you have to know that you were expecting something and then also wait a bit to say that you didn't get it and then tell the other thing like, ooh, I need this again or whatever, right?
Yeah.
So now we've all of a sudden got a delay that we've built into this thing, which now guarantees that when that information does finally arrive, it's really out of order, right?
Mm-hmm. This is old as fuck.
Yeah.
Old as fuck, meaning like 0.3 seconds, but yeah. Still.
So now what do you do? Now, like, imagine that was an XY coordinate of like where your player's been running to, right? And now for some reason we were like, ooh, this one's important, right? But now my game already knows like the player's supposed to be here, but suddenly it gets this information that, oh yeah, a third of a second ago, the player was in this other spot. And then I get moved there. Like, that doesn't make any sense. But on the other hand, if the player was like swinging an axe, then even if I got that information a third of a second ago, actually I do need to play the swing and axe animation, even though that's an old piece of data, right? Mm-hmm. So
long story short, you know, we made an MMO in a weekend during the Shenanigans Jam 2019. Mm-hmm. It was doing none of these things, right? Because there's a big difference between just blasting as much information as you can across a network for a jam game. And you know what? If it crashes for people, if the game state desyncs, whatever.
Which literally is what happened after a short period of time. That a lot of the images that were on screen for people, the picture, like the trees and other things that were out there in the world, weren't actually there.
Yeah, you go try to interact with them and nothing happens.
You'd see people stuck in animation frames. So you'd see people walking around with their mouth open because they tried to bite something.
They didn't get the information that the frame completed, right? So we knew it started, but not that the action finished.
Yeah. So the thing that we're researching is not just like, hey, how do we make a multiplayer game? Like, we know that.
Yeah.
Question is, how do we make
you just send data? That's an easy problem.
Yeah. How do we make a reliable, commercially viable multiplayer game?
Which is a whole different fucking thing. Yeah, that's why you see
people can depend on.
Yeah. You see those YouTube comments again, as we talked about before, people are like, just add multiplayer. Or you see something in like Unreal Engine or Unity where they're like, yeah, this is like a drop-in multiplayer thing. And sure. It is.
Sure.
It's not going to cut the mustard when you get 1,000 people playing all at once or when you're trying to reduce your server costs, you know, to not be so
massive. And it doesn't automatically solve these questions for you. Like, what happens if I get information out of order? What should happen, right? Mm-hmm. That can't just be answered automatically because what that information is matters. And then there aren't any two games – except for like maybe clones of first-person shooters or something, right? But even there's like just enough differences typically that there's just no generic way to say, okay, here's how to know what data matters, here's what doesn't matter, here's how we can compress it so that it's all really efficient and cheap. Because even things like, so right now we haven't tried any compression at all because the goal is like figure out how to do it, figure out how to model the data. Don't worry about that part yet. Send it in the easiest way to think about possible. And later do an enormous amount of compression to change how it all is encoded. And so we're just saying these like, it's just an enormous amount of data. Right. And so it would cost us, like, it's not a big deal even right now for two players to be running around the screen. But as soon as we actually get the rest of the stuff hooked up, it's probably going to cost us something like maybe 20 cents an hour just for like a few people to be playing one game. Right. Which isn't very much for that hour.
But that's way too fucking much.
But if you start adding that up, like if the game is successful, right? You start adding that up and our server costs are going to be fucking astronomical, right? So then you have to take it. Now there's that you have to deal with.
Yeah. Because if we're making a single player game, we put it out there and people pay us for it. And then we don't have to worry about resources
ongoing
beyond
costs.
That point. Yeah. Yep. So there's tons of just really wild questions that come when you start to scale things, when you want to make sure that people have a good time without crashes or problems, which kind of brings us to the next topic.
Oh, yeah, Cyberpunk.
Cyberpunk 2077. What a week it's been for CD Projekt. Is it still CD Projekt Red or is it just CD Projekt now?
It's CD Projekt Red, I think.
Yep. Well, here's what happened. Cyberpunk, Big time hype. We talked about it last week. Everybody's talking about it. Mm-hmm. They got like 8 million pre-orders. They launched on PlayStation. They launched on Xbox. They launched on PC.
Highest peak concurrent users on Steam for a single player game of all time.
And one of the things we talked about last week was how it was kind of weird how like they really just didn't let people see the console version of the game pretty much at all prior mm-hmm. to launch. Well, now we know why. Yeah. And it's because it's a real shit piece.
Yeah.
It is so bad that the number of players requesting refunds for the console version, and I just want to just like backtrack a second, just note that like PlayStation 4 and Xbox One came out in 2013.
Yeah,
and consoles, old hardware. Consoles in the year that they are released are basically like mid-tier gaming PCs in terms of power because they're like $400, which is, you know, like you can't get a lot of power for $400.
Yep.
Right. So take like a mid-tier gaming PC from 2013 and try to run Cyberpunk on it. You have a very bad time. And that's basically what's happening with PlayStation 4 and Xbox
One. Which, you know, right? Yeah, which just totally makes sense. That
it makes sense.
Was a very hard thing to do.
So the game is running so badly, there are so many bugs, that the volume of players demanding refunds has just essentially like crushed everybody in its wake. This isn't really a problem on PC because the PC stores that you can get it through, you just like get your money back. It's not much of a problem on Xbox either because Microsoft has a 2-week refund window. So that's okay. It's been a bit of a problem for PlayStation. What happened was CD Projekt basically just said to their players like, oh yeah, if you're having a hard time running the game, just go ahead and request a refund. That actually doesn't jive with Sony's refund policy.
Which doesn't exist, basically.
Which is apparently it's ad hoc. Mm-hmm. And so CD Projekt basically just like dumped a real buggy, bad experience onto millions and millions of players on PlayStation. And then just redirected the ire of those players onto Sony. And then, so Sony's like, oh, shit. And so then Sony was scrambling to figure out what to do. They ended up opening up full refunds to anybody who requested it, provided they can verify
purchase. Specifically for this game, yep.
Specifically for Cyberpunk. And then my bet is that the number of refunds they had to issue once they opened that up was so great that they just said, fuck it. Because what happened next was Sony removed Cyberpunk from its store.
Yeah.
Which is for, I assume it's still there for like available to PS5, I think, but it is definitely not available for PS4 anymore.
Yeah.
Yeah. So that's a big deal.
Yeah. That is like, as far as, again, we talk about, you know, games being an extremely, it's so hard to get a game across the finish line. You know, even the games that we make as a very small team with the level of complexity and scale they have. You talk about Cyberpunk, you know, this a project's been in the works for 7 years.
It's 800 person team. The edge of every piece of tech that there is.
Yeah, like having a platform after your launch pull the game from sale is literally like that's the nightmare
because scenario. Of quality.
Yeah, because of quality.
Yep.
Yeah, that is the nightmare scenario because like what you literally can't – I mean if you can't sell – like they're your distributor. So if you can't sell through them, like, you know, God forbid that Microsoft is like, actually, yeah, we're going to follow Sony's lead because like refunds cost money. Like, this is the thing people don't get too is like doing chargebacks and stuff like that does cost money for the platform holder. So you don't want a game on your store that actually ends up costing you – cash at the end of the day, especially at a scale of something like what is, you know, apparently the scale of Cyberpunk. Yeah, there's a real possibility that people can lose some money on this. And so, yeah, I mean, that's just the worst.
It's yeah. And I think the thing that really kind of like gets my goat about this whole thing is we've been making games now since we've been publishing games since 2013. And we've gone through a wide range of different levels of scrutiny as we publish our games onto different platforms.
By the platforms themselves.
By the platforms themselves. Because, you know, you publish something on the App Store, you publish something on Switch or on Xbox or whatever, they take a good hard look at your game and they have a bunch of rules, you know, where they're like, the game has to run well. It has to respect the constraints of the device. You know, it can't like make the device, it can't brick the device. Mm-hmm.
It has to integrate with some of our services, or if it does integrate with them and it's optional, it has to do it in a way that doesn't like make us look bad or destroy our services.
Yeah. And we've bumped into these kinds of things in a less egregious way in the past where like maybe, I remember at one point we had trouble with Flop Rocket and some of our earlier games when we were integrating Beescotch ID, but they exactly mirrored Hearthstone in terms mm-hmm. of the login flow, and we had a hard time getting through because of things like the login flow, even though already existing very popular successful games
were
doing exactly what we were doing, and it kind of at the time it kind of opens this question of like maybe the rules don't always apply equally, you know, to all parties.
Which, of course, isn't a surprise to anybody because that's
always true.
It's always true.
And even more recently, we've had some finicky things with – and I'm not going to like point out specific platforms that we've had trouble with because, you know, we don't need to do that. But we've had trouble with even something as simple as like on Levelhead having a line break on a single interface – change this flow of a single sentence in a way that was slightly harder to visually parse than normal,
or having a button that didn't quite match the padding and font size requirements.
Right. So like,
ooh yeah,
so
that one about drove me fucking insane.
Yeah.
That
one. So we've literally had platforms just tell us like, no, we literally will not publish your game
because your font is too small on one button.
Yeah. Because of
only
this
a font. Little, not like so small we can't read it. It's just like, it doesn't quite hit spec.
Like if you measure it out, you know, like, yes, it is like 0.3% within the guideline, but actually like, there is a guideline.
Oh yeah, that was it, wasn't it?
Yeah, yeah. And that's how much scrutiny we've seen our games hit from time to time as we're trying to get through some of these hurdles, you know. And then to see this just go out into the public in this state is pretty wild.
Yeah, and we should say like – this is true, but this also isn't like the fault of the quality of the game does not lie with the cert team, right? Because
this is a separate thing we're talking about at this point.
Yeah, so it's like it's not the cert team's fault that the game then was like broken and like, and it is true that I would have expected cert, given the scrutiny that we've seen for our own games, to have caught just how broken it was, you know. But we also know, and all of the cert teams say explicitly, like cert is not for QA. That is not its purpose. Its purpose is to make sure that the guidelines that we have are being followed. And the extent of those guidelines varies by platform, and some are very light, some are very rigorous. But also all those teams have limited resources. It is still surprising that with a thing of the scale of Cyberpunk that there weren't maybe a few more resources put towards checking it out. Yeah. Well, but my bet is though, is that my, like what I would bet anything is that cert failed it would be my 100%. Bet.
Yep.
And then now we have these two enormous companies that are at a crossroads, right? Where it's like, you've got, I guess, you know, a whole bunch of companies, right?
You got 8 million pre-orders already.
Yeah. Fuckloads of money on the line. And now the question is like, Because this happened to us too, right? We failed cert and then just made an argument that, okay, well, yeah, that's technically true that we failed this one requirement or whatever, but here's our argument for why that's actually okay. We've done that on numerous occasions, right? Mm-hmm. And we've had the platforms agree. And so without a doubt, this thing failed cert. That's probably what happened. And then some two people talked to each other, right? And came to the conclusion that that was acceptable, right?
Yep.
And probably it was, you know, people high up at CD Projekt Red, because as we've seen from all of their current correspondence, like they were fucking pushing. Come hell or high water, that game was coming out on that day. Mm-hmm. Nothing mattered.
Yeah, I mean, the CEO has publicly stated, because they had an earnings call recently as well, and so like publicly stated that they just ignored the problems. Like they had internal people working on the game telling them for the past year about these problems on last-gen consoles, and they just kept pushing for adding new features and wrapping up existing features and not pushing for optimization or bug fixing at all. Mm-hmm. So, like, it was always kind of that, like, I'm sure we'll get there in time kind of thing.
Yep.
You know, like we're not necessarily
actually, it feels more to me like the classic problem you hear about it. And like, it's the classic antagonism between like management who's deadline and money focused and developers who are quality and features focused. Right. And QA that everybody just kind of brushes under the rug and tries to pay as little attention because people don't want, because QA's job is to say, hey, this
shit's broke.
This
is broke. They're literally there to like fuck up your day in terms of like view of how this studio system works is that like you just want to make features, you just want to make like cool new stuff. Then someone who ever tells you to like, hey,
to pump the brakes,
like your shit's broke is going to annoy you. And that's why we talk about integrating this idea of quality through your whole company. Is the only way to make it so that when an engineer gets a feedback report from QA and they're like, hey, shit's broke, that the response is not
the response is thank you.
Yeah, the response is like, oh, thank God you caught it before it shipped and Sony ripped us off their platform, right? Yeah. Like,
And management's response is, oh, I'm glad this got caught. Let's make sure this developer has time to fix this, right?
Like,
As opposed to, well, too bad. I guess I'm going to still make this developer finish implementing their current features and fix the bug because now it's mandatory crunch time.
Yeah, which CD Projekt will also be doing. So I think there's a lot of just, frankly, you're seeing sort of the stack of bad business practices come to fruition here.
Yeah, I'm really curious to hear how much because there's so much just behind the scenes, you know, business and like politics and stuff going on. That caused all of this to come out the way that it did. I imagine over this next year or half year in particular, there's going to be stuff is going to start to leak and we're going to get access to more information. And it'll just be so fascinating if somebody can put together like a whole
– what's the story?
Coherent story, you know, from like start to finish. It's like I would read the shit out of a novelization of like – CD Projekt Red and the development of Cyberpunk. Like here's what it looked like from start to launch, right? Here's how this whole thing went down. That would be so fascinating.
I mean, this is the stuff that like business books are made of.
You know?
Like case studies.
Yeah.
Of like management flying off the rails sort of a thing.
Yeah.
Yeah. I do think the realization, you know, Seth, you mentioned earlier, the realization that the rules do not apply equally even when you're going up against a clearly defined rule book that is individually checked, has been one of those things that I think I personally have found most annoying about the Cyberpunk stuff because, you know, like Adam said, the reality that like there is no fucking way this game passed cert.
No.
Like
no
as way. A legit thing. Because like the certification team is doing like that's their job to say where it's broken and how, right?
And honestly, like – As annoying as it is, like they're good at it.
Look at yeah.
they spotting do catch a 0.3%
difference in font size. Like, come on,
yeah. Like they'll catch everything.
Yeah,
and that's what I mean. And like here we are complaining about like that they caught us. Like they caught us not exactly adhering to their rules, but like that's their job, and they do it well.
Yeah, well, but after that, it's the job now between us to either now address that problem that they found, or for us to basically escalate, right? Because cert's job is to say this does or does not pass. That's the whole thing. And the next thing is now our job is either to fix it or to make an argument to somebody who is not the cert team, right? It's somebody who decides like what rules need to be followed under what conditions and now evaluates it in context, right? Yeah. And so that's where the deals and like exceptions and all kind of stuff get made. And that actually like it makes sense, right? It makes sense as a way to do that. The difference is, of course, your level of access. So if you're a small developer with a small title, your ability to get a rule bent when you really need that rule to get bent, when it would be totally fine, it wouldn't go against the goals of the platform, it's very hard and often impossible.
So to see it happen at this scale to me is genuinely disappointing. Like I'm disappointed in the leadership of the platforms, 100%. Yeah. Because like
to not catch this,
yeah. Well, because you know that because they caught not catching it.
They didn't. Honestly, though, here's the thing. I'm not disappointed. I think it just kind of sucks for everybody because like there's no winners in this scenario, and it was also a very difficult situation to be in, right? Because think about it, like if you are a platform, this game with like literally more hype than any game I've ever seen.
Yeah. Oh yeah, the biggest hype train of all time.
Its original launch date was April, right? And you're thinking like, I mean, it's been postponed since April through November. Like, surely, surely that's enough time for them to have resolved the issues that they postponed it for. We have our cert team. They said there were some problems with the game, but also I just got off the phone with the CEO of the company who said that like, yeah, they'll have a day one patch and it's ready to go and don't worry about it, you know?
And those problems are unbearable like, for like the normal user, the average user experience.
It's or not, yeah, whatever. It's not that bad for the normal user experience and they'll be rapidly getting these things fixed up and they have a good track record, you know? They've got some great games already on the portfolio there that our players all love. And I'm not going to be the platform who misses out on the sales, who messes up the launch of this game that everybody wants by saying like, no, we're going to respect the entire docket of cert guidelines, you know? So like there's
– Yeah, I think the problem with that mentality though is that there's literally a gap in responsibility in that scenario, because essentially what we're saying in this scenario is that there's no way for any party to actually be responsible because of the interdependence of the parts.
It's the problem of everybody. This is like the customer's always right thing, which is like everybody wanted to respect the hype around the game.
100%.
Right? Yeah. And like CD Projekt was like, we got to get this game out. I mean, look at the hype around this game. This people are chomping at the bit. We've already delayed it multiple times.
And they had like, and probably in Christmas, I think is like, that's seen as like, if you fail to deliver for Christmas, right? I think the belief there is that you basically implode the hype and you just like kill it because like there's some belief in that thing as a real hardcore deadline.
Yeah. So they basically put all these different platforms into a essentially impossible position because if you're Microsoft, are you going to be like, you know, a lot of our customers maybe do own a PlayStation. Are we going to just send them over there to buy it? By us saying no, we're not going to let this game onto our platform in the current state.
No, right? I'm saying you at that level, you know, you should be making the call to your buddy at Sony and being like, "Can we talk about this? Because this is fucked." Like, because also the whole promises of a day one patch thing. The day one patch goes through cert. Our patches go through cert. It's not just the first fucking time, right? Like that it gets checked. Right. It's just not the case. And so I think this is what bothers me about it is this. I agree that it's a complicated situation.
It's a systemic design failure.
Yes, and I think the thing that's troublesome about it is the fact that the system is not designed in such a way to allow for actual like really effective quality assurance when you're talking about literally the most important title of a year, if not of like a decade, right? This was essentially it, supposed to be it in the AAA space, right? And clearly was in terms of sales volume. And to not have a system that allows you to make sure that you don't implode your own store.
Yeah, the system doesn't handle market pressure.
Yes, correct. 100%.
Yeah. You get an – yeah, and the thing is like if they do reject a small indie title that has 50 pre-orders, whatever. Yeah. Like it's –
We're lucky just to be there, you know.
Like, we're just happy to participate, you know. And it's not going to crush the store. There's not going to be any news articles about that about the fact that your indie game was delayed.
It's also not going to impact your quarterly earnings at all, right? Which is a big
part. Or if it does,
you're probably ours, but it doesn't impact theirs.
But if it does, you're not publicly traded. You don't have a share price. You don't have investors like banging down the door who are pissed off that this thing got delayed, you know. So, I think you're right though that like once the dollar amounts get high enough, all bets are off.
Well, what it's
the incentive
do is,
for all parties is basically to push through
to move money through the system.
And I think this is why everyone's complained about Ubisoft. You've complained about Bethesda, EA, etc. And the reality is like the scale of these operations in these games is such that the money pressure associated with the launch of any one of them is going to be so high that it will almost always in all these scenarios eclipse any of the actual sort of quality.
Yeah, well, I mean, but if they, like, what's the cost of another month of development for them?
Yeah, right? It's tremendous. 800 people.
10 million, 15 million, $20 million.
It's whatever it is, it's enormous, right? Yeah. And so that 6 month delay that they had, like, because for us, a 6 month delay is extremely costly, right? And we're a 6-person team. So there's just huge financial pressure to get these things out. I think also what this speaks to is is the blown out scope of new IP AAA titles. Because I mean, if you have an existing IP and you're making a sequel, like you can borrow so much of your work from a prior project that you get kind of a shortcut into this huge project that you're making, right? It's still hard and costly, but when you're making a new IP with new technology, like trying to be on the cutting edge, trying to embrace like the newest feature sets of new hardware and all this kind of stuff, your scope is enormous.
Yeah.
It's just huge. And I think there's actually just an interesting mismatch in reality and scoping of like, and this is funny because you see this in for indie titles all the time. Like people are always making fun of like how like indies can't keep scope under control, right?
Nobody can keep scope
under control. It's impossible. And I think in AAA, the incentive is to have these just enormous games where every feature is new and like everything is really expensive. And the end result of that is if that's where all of the pressure is, and you're also doing that under these tight deadlines because it's so expensive to do that, that it just isn't a surprise that the end result in every scenario is like, okay, yeah, it does a whole bunch of things that are spectacular, but you do have to just accept that some of it is going to be a shitty experience.
Yeah, right.
Yeah.
Oh, man. What a thing.
Wild
ride.
I do think, though, that this is important. What's going on with this game? I think it's indicative of a larger pattern. You know, we saw it with things like when Fallout 76 came out and just like the absolute train wreck that was like that was a train wreck that just it just sort of kept going for like 2 months. You know? there's a lot of practices that need to change in the AAA game space and like to get in line with like modern development practices and also the idea of like how could it be the case that management of a company would just completely ignore the people who are making the product, you know?
That's really the big problem here, right? It's not even about practice. It's about the complete lack of alignment between all the – because it should be that in a team who's trying to put a thing together to launch, that everyone's goal is the same, which is to launch a successful product, right? And yeah, people have different opinions about which parts are the most important and so on, but you can get alignment on those things by paying attention to the full reality, right? So that if you sit down with a designer and the designer's like, oh, I really want it to be this because this is the perfect gameplay experience. And you say, and then you as the person managing money say, that's great, but there's not a chance in hell we can afford to do that. So how can we pare this down, right? So, but again, the point is like you're aligning goals so that everybody knows that their thing isn't the most important thing.
Yeah, you're working with the team's constraints.
You're working with the team. And you, if everyone has a picture of everyone else's constraints, like just enough of that, you get everybody aligned and then everybody's listening to everybody. And because if somebody comes to you and they say, with the constraints that we have, we are out of scope. It is not possible, right? And that's basically the issue we have with this game, right? Is that the constraints that it had were that it had to be out, right? By the end of the year. That was its number one constraint. With that constraint, that game was fucking out of scope. Their launch plan was out of scope. It was not possible. And their options were basically they could do one of two things: remove the constraint and punt it to the next year, or they had to cut down scope. Those were the two options, and apparently they didn't do
either.
Well, first they didn't do either, and then they didn't do the latter, right? Maybe they did, but if they did, they didn't do it nearly enough.
Yeah, I feel like I'm watching a real life reenactenment of the Phoenix Project,
right?
You know, like, it's pretty wild. So anyways, I don't think we have time for any questions.
That'll be it. We got to dunk on people today. That was the
although our top question is from VooVoo987, who says, what are your thoughts on the modern AAA environment and the practices that take place within it?
Well, you know,
we kind of retroactively answered that one.
Yeah, we'll call that one. Call that one answered. Although we're not speaking to all of AAA, and of course, we're not in AAA. We don't really know what's actually going on behind the scenes, right? We just know what we hear from other people, and of course, any different company is different than the other company. But we do get to see these glimpses here and there when a game launches, right? And when we hear whisperings from people leading up to a game launch, it's. In general, the picture is not pretty, I guess is the short of it.
Yeah. Although it's also probably the case that we rarely hear about when things just went smoothly and nothing
100%. Went
wrong. Oh, yeah.
Yep. Yeah. It must be pretty somewhere, right? There must be some. There must be a few places that are doing a decent job.
Yeah, I mean, FIFA 21 launched and outsold Cyberpunk, and I haven't heard a thing about it. I don't know. Maybe it is. Maybe it was terrible to work on, but also maybe it was totally fine.
I don't even know who made it.
Yeah.
I think it's
EA. But EA doesn't make FIFA games, I don't think. They just buy companies to make them for them and then shut those companies down, is my understanding.
That's I'm going to start calling FIFA an asset flip just for fun. Because
I think it's an asset. I mean, sometimes they do forget to change like the logos in the game when they're repackaging the same game year over year. So, it's an asset flip of itself.
Yep.
Though, that's true. So that's okay.
But so is soccer/football/ every sport already. Like every year, it's the same game. Rules are the same. Graphics are the same. It's always the same. I mean, like in real life, right?
In real life, yeah.
It's always the same.
Too.
Yeah, like the only difference is like some faces and some logos change. That's the only difference every year.
Yeah. Yeah, it's all the same. All right, well, that's all the time we have for this week. We'd like to thank our producers, Fat Bard and Jen Coster, for putting the podcast together, and thanks to our community moderators who keep our Discord running. To get more involved in the community, just go to podcast.bscotch.net, where we have links to the Discord, a way for you to donate, and links to the archives. Thank you all for listening. We'll see you next week.
Goodbye.